Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So Tyler, we now have, and we can start in a few places here, but AR Fox is somebody who has seemed talented, well-liked, respected, appreciated, paid his dues, and he was sort of, you know, like in that kind of Kip Sabian, you see him every once in a while, and then you don't really know where he goes after that mode. And tonight, they gave him something. You know, he was, Darby talked him up in a vignette at the beginning. As things played out, we kind of know why they did what they did, the way they did it. Orange Cassidy and AR Fox have a nice 14-minute match, but Fox loses. He's tired of losing, and so he turns heel, and then he joins the Embassy and is now affiliated with Swerve Strickland. I like this. I mean, you know, we'll see how he does. His ring style seems more babyface-like, but you can say that about so many wrestlers in AEW, and some of them, Jack Perry and Swerve Strickland, for that matter. I mean, you got to have some heels. So I actually think they did a nice job here. This wasn't like a blockbuster hot shot show. But if you go, hey, it was July 26, 2023, where AR Fox got character development, got an angle, got a sense of purpose besides, hey, look at this indie veteran who's helped so many people along the way, get in some nice spots. He's got a chance to do something more than that. What do you think?
Yeah, I just like that, you know, from the match itself, you know, when you're looking at this card, it doesn't seem like it's, as you alluded to, a gangbusters episode of television, especially when you have kind of the collision of last week and this week coming up to be kind of the focal point of AEW for the week. It just in the match itself, that little vignette beforehand put AR Fox chances of winning from 0% in my mind to, you know, maybe under 10%. But I was like, oh, wow, are they going to kind of do something because this is an off night tonight? And just kind of that, for me as a, you know, someone who's watched every episode of Dynamite, those little nuances and breaking that up for me personally as a viewer is helpful. And I think a vast majority of the audience are people that have been there from the beginning or have watched for a really long time, you know, the rating super static as a result. So, you know, I think that was good intermatch wise. And I couldn't help but think that, you know, is Darby Allin like the you know, baby face behind the scenes version of Kevin Nash from the 90s, you know, some guy who's getting a lot of people over that are his friends and telling a lot of stories with them. It was interesting there. I'm sure you have a better comparison than that. That was just the first name that came to my mind. But yeah, I think it worked in AR Fox now aligned with Swerve Strickland. I like that combo together. I think they both have a lot of the same qualities. I mean, I think Swerve is a bigger potential star than AR Fox, obviously, but they both work a style that is more babyface, as you alluded to, but are super talented in the ring, and I would much prefer them be heels that are doing something than, you know, being on TV once every 4 weeks. So them being together, I think dropping the rest of the Embassy would probably be a benefit for them, and them being a tag team that does stuff, I think could be a potent combination with obviously the focus of the tag team division tonight being the forefront there. So, I thought it was good, especially when you have a show that doesn't seem like it has much potential. I think it was certainly the bright spot is to elevate AR Fox in losing, but then being part of the main event and the opening match. So I thought it was good. You know, him, Orange Cassidy, Darby, Swerve, Moxley were kind of the focal points of the show tonight, which is a whole nother discussion on, is that where you want to be with Dynamite, and not having a lot of your key players that are on Dynamite every week on the show. I think it really showed tonight, and that's, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but that's really what came to me. AR Fox getting a rub is a positive thing for sure.
And I don't know that this angle happens if there isn't a collision. Like, we always talk about Raw and SmackDown and the roster split, and, hey, it's going to give breathing space and time for some of the wrestlers who were not given TV time because, you know, you got to feature your top stars on both shows all the time in order to hold up ratings. And it I don't know. Maybe it would happen, but it does kind of seem like, well, we got this extra 2 hours on Saturday to work with, and some of our bigger stars and bigger matches are on those shows. So we can do things like this to try to alleviate the frustration that a lot of AEW fans have felt for 199 episodes of Dynamite, which is, when are we going to see some of these mid-carders who have talent get a chance to rise, to shine, to show what they can do, to be elevated? And so again, not the story of the year, not the story of the week even, but tonight it is noteworthy. They set out to take somebody who I think is liked and respected and give him a more defined, prominent, worthwhile role. Tyler, your Twitter handle, I'm going to call it that, is what?
It's Ring of Tyler.
Right. So that is based on you covering Ring of Honor for PW Torch early on, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
maybe I'm just a coincidence. Yeah. So should they do more? Because you're familiar with the embassy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Should AEW do more if they're going to actually dedicate this much TV time to A.R. Fox and Swerve Strickland to introduce us to that guy who's at ringside, who they mention his name every now and then, Prince Nana, but we don't know what the embassy is, what it stands for, what the backstory is. It's assumed knowledge. I'm loading the question. It's hard to disagree with me, but you can if you want. You're always invited to. Have they done enough to establish that faction and the embassy for this to mean as much as it could?
I mean, you definitely loaded it, but I don't disagree with you. And, you know, also for the record, I'm very much more up on my Sinclair owning of Ring of Honor than the Tony Khan version of Ring of Honor. So yeah. I don't want to be called out by anyone that, you know, I'm not as up on it as I was, but yes, I mean, it's certainly in one reason to agree with you is an anecdote. I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but just in general, Jerry Lynn and Jack Perry segment, when he comes out and, you know, my wife is on the couch. She's a passive watcher of the programs. Obviously I'm watching wrestling a lot. And she's like, who's this guy? Is this just some like old guy backstage that Jack Perry's going to beat up? And I was like, well, no, see, he was an ECW and that's the ECW title. And then that's, you know, and then I was like, yeah, so you just have to know 30 years of wrestling history and have a kind of like encyclopedic knowledge to understand what's going on here. And I have that and it still didn't work for me. So I can only imagine what it, you know, so that's just like a summation of the same thing with the Ring of Honor and the embassy. And that's why, you know, I suggested lightly there that Swerve and AR Fox are just they can be in the embassy. We can even call that, but they're the AEW version. And then they're friends with guys who are in Ring of Honor. And you can just do that if you don't want to take the time to explain it. So, you know, maybe if they're on Collision, Ian Riccaboni will do the legwork to explain that. But even then it's going to be, you know, Excalibur 2.0 and him rushing through, you know, not breathing, explaining kind of a 1 year history of this group and why they're important, why you should care. And I just don't think, you know, it's there. And you know, I thought there were parts of tonight that were taking some of the better ideas that we've seen on Collision from a formatting standpoint, but you know, explaining groups like this, explain Jerry Lynn's importance to ECW, the, you know, the FTW title, et cetera, still being lost there. So yeah, I agree with you as a moral of the story. Go ahead. Yeah.
If Sandman came out, I would want them to explain who he was.
Yeah.
If Tommy Dreamer came out, I'd want them to explain who he was. If Shane Douglas came out, if Sabu came out, I would want them to explain. It's Jerry Lynn. I love Jerry Lynn. I've watched him since the late 1980s when he and Sean Waltman are tearing it up in the Minnesota indie scene in a classic series of matches. And I think he's one of the most underappreciated, underrated workers of his generation. I don't think during his three decades of wrestling, there was another wrestler who had, and I say this, and it's always sort of clunky to say, but more wrestlers had their best career matches against Jerry Lynn than any other wrestler out there during that span of time that Jerry wrestled. Jerry just brought the best out in people. And he was, I remember my Russian college professor said, don't always just look at the leader of Russia. Look at the guy who stands behind the president of Russia, the leader of Russia, but he's standing behind the last three of them. That's the guy with power. That's the guy who knows everything. And Jerry Lynn was the guy who was just like there for so much of history and had so many great matches, but he wasn't in the Million Dollar Club. He wasn't pushed. He didn't have like major pay-per-view main events with WWF or WCW, but he was a great worker. Okay, I know all that. I've seen him. And it took me a few minutes. I'm like, we get near the end of the angle. I'm like, wait, they haven't told anybody who he is. Like, it's all implied. And so I'm like, yay, Jerry's getting ring time and getting mic time. And yet then it hits me. Oh, people don't, they kind of, I mean, some people know, but yeah, it falls into the category again of Tony Khan booking for newsletter subscribers who from the 90s, you know, like when he was, you know, I don't know if he thinks everybody's that way, or he just thinks that's the most effective way to draw people in, have a little mystery, make people feel that they're on the outside and they got to study to be one of the insiders. I don't know, but you're right. Jerry Lynn, another example of that. Prince Nana, no Jerry Lynn. But yeah, explain him. Let's get some character development. Let's figure out who he is and what he's about and what the empathy stands for. So, yeah, point made there. Okay, I got more to say. There's some other things I know we got emails on and we'll probably get calls on, but I thought that stood out. And I'm you know, Air Fox is one of those kind of Jerry Lynn types. You know, they're underappreciated, talented guys who people say good things about, but he just hasn't had that break. And now he's getting a break to be a heel on national TV and have good matches and change up his style. So I think people can be happy for him and enjoy booing him for what will hopefully be a nice run for him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I agree. Yeah. So let's pause and introduce the show, and then we'll get to calls and emails and more conversation. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show. And the other voice you hear is Tyler Sage from PW Torch. And we are here talking AEW Dynamite following the Wednesday, July 26th, 2023 episode. And we welcome your phone calls. If you are live streaming the show and you've already called in and you haven't pushed one, but at any point during the show you want to join the conversation with a question, a comment, or a reaction, push one on your keypad. Then we'll see a little hand go up next to your number on our switchboard. You can also call if you haven't yet and push one. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push one if you want to be on the show. You can also email us if that works better for you, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You don't need to listen live to participate in the mailbag section. If you're watching Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, or Collision, and you're watching it live or semi-live, you can email us during the show and then download the show later that night or the next morning and see if we read your question on the air. All right, let's get back to what we're doing here and continue our conversation. We can begin here with let's see who is up first here. Chris from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. Chris, welcome. Good to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Gentlemen, good evening. How are we doing?
Doing well.
Good. Yep.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, where to start? I guess with this one, what's the headline from this show? Like, what is the big piece of news? What are we supposed to take away?
Yeah. I mean, I think – I'm just thinking through a few things. So, I mean, it was an ensemble-type show in terms of happenings. I think the top thing, because we really didn't get much on the MJF Cole thing, you know, we got promos taped last week that aired this week, which is kind of weird. I guess everybody getting a day off or something. I would say the Jericho Appreciation Society development and setting up a match with Jericho and Takeshita, managed by Don Callis, next week against Sammy and Daniel Garcia. Tyler, would that be the top development? It's possible I'm forgetting something that jumps off my.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably close with Orange Cassidy and Jon Moxley presumably having a match for that title, and that feels like an opportunity for Cassidy to drop that. But, you know, yeah. Is Moxley going to be an international champion? Does that feel right for him? So, Jericho's ongoing story as opposed to this, you know, that's not booked, so that is booked. So I would say the official, yeah, is that, but that's pretty light from, especially Jericho not really being on screen in front of the live crowd tonight at all, just all of it happening in backstage vignettes feels unlike AEW, I would say. Not necessarily wrong or bad, but just unlike AEW.
It'd be a nice week to have some dark matches for that audience because, you know, I mean, they got to see a brawl at the end for, you know, 15 minutes, give or take. But it feels like a show where it'd be nice to just surprise them with Kenny in the Box or whatever, you know, a special Miro appearance in a competitive match afterwards. Just something to give them a little something extra than what they got tonight. I'm just thinking of, you know, the fans who paid money and attended. I don't think they got an A show, an A version of Dynamite tonight. There were plenty of stars and plenty of good matches, but I'm using the word plenty wrong. There were a handful of top stars and a handful of developments, but I wouldn't say there were plenty of top stars relative to when you buy an AEW ticket 2 months before a show, what you expect to see. Chris, back to you. What do you think?
I mean, I think that there wasn't one. And you don't have to have, you know, a 4-plus star match every week to have a highlight. You can have a backstage segment be a highlight. You can have a vignette be a highlight if it's done well enough. I want to get to that in a second. But if I had bought a ticket to tonight's show, I would have been very disappointed. And I understand Albany is not exactly the wrestling capital of the universe, but it's also not a place that is hurting for shows. It gets its fair share. So it's not like this is somewhere that, you know, has to wait 6 years to see that. But still, I don't think you can, with the ticket sales struggles that AEW has been very publicly having, especially in Canada, I don't think that's the sort of show you can put on too often without scaring away your core audience, which is a common theme we've been looking at recently.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think there's a lot of things to consider if you're Tony Khan when you book these shows. And TV ratings is one of them. Protecting, elevating, and building stars, promoting future matches, promoting future TV shows are among them too. But satisfying that live audience and making sure that they come back again and feel that they got their money's worth is important too. And that's why I say this would be one of those weeks where it'd be good to have some dark matches. And I don't think we have anyone, at least not letting us know ahead of time that they were attending the show. So if anybody is listening to us who attended, give us a call. Let us know if anything happened afterwards. Chris, go ahead. Back to you for any more.
Yeah. Do you have any sense of who's handling all of these vignettes that we're seeing now? The one we saw this week, yes, it had an ulterior motive, but we haven't seen anything about AR Fox at all, really. We had the one from Nick Wayne last week. I think they've really been stepping up their game with these video packages to introduce us to people who they think we should know about, but the majority of people don't know about. Now, Tyler just pointed out that they didn't do that with Jerry Lynn, and they should have. By the way, Tyler, Jerry Lynn is an old man from the back, so your wife was kind of right. we have to accept we're getting old now, friend. This is what we have to look forward to. Stuff that we looked at 30 years ago is just old men now. But do you know, either of you, like, if this is a new person that's doing this, if this is a new direction that they're going, or if it's just randomly becoming good all of a sudden?
It seems like it's a deliberate effort. I will check and ask, like, if there's someone in particular who's heading this up. I don't think it's just, like, new this week or new the last few weeks. We've seen it, and I think that's part of the frustration, Tyler, is when they do the vignettes, we're like, yeah, that's good. Do more of that. And I wonder if Collision's ratings going up the last few weeks, you know, and that last Saturday was a pleasant surprise for a show that didn't have the lineup or the key match or the key angle. In future going up has given Tony a bit of a more calm confidence that he can not, that he doesn't have to pace the show. Like, everybody has super short attention spans and is just waiting to turn the channel. And maybe that's going to lead to a little bit more pacing, a little more character development. I think, you know, Darby has stepped up in ways I don't think many people would have predicted. And the vignette about the backstory of him and AR Fox was really nicely done. Tyler, your thoughts on the vignettes? And like I said, Chris, I'll try to find out if there is a particular person or a few people who are producing them and get some particular credit for it.
Yeah, I mean, there was some reporting that Darby was very much behind the Nick Wayne, at least the way it was set up. I don't know if it's him being like walking in and saying, like, hey, let's do a vignette in this way. But, you know,
well,
Darby
does a lot of his own stuff. Like, he very well might have been behind the ones he's done because he just goes out with his digital camera at times and has just done his own editing.
Mm-hmm. And that was, I mean, he's the focal point of that promo tonight. It's all strange because he's not part of the match. So, like, I would not be shocked at all if Darby just made that and then showed it to Tony Khan. And Tony's like, yeah, cool, let's put it on there. The Nick Wayne worked well. So, you know, it might be, instead of like a cabal of producers, the WWE style, might just be literally Darby just, you know, going into business for himself, so to say, but in a positive way. That's why I compared him to the good version of like a Kevin Nash in WCW, where he's getting all his friends over, but it's actually working and helping the show. So, that would be my guess, knowing the way at least Dynamite kind of is shot from the hip from a standpoint, besides timing out well every week. So that would be my guess.
Yeah. Chris, back to you.
Okay. I think, Wade, it might be time. It's time for you to stop believing. Denial is a river in Egypt, and you don't need to be bathing in it. This MJF Cole thing is not going to work. They tried to get a little more serious this week. It's still not good, man. Like, I know it's just so obvious to everyone what's happening, and I understand you have to do obvious stories sometimes, because if everything is unpredictable, then nothing is unpredictable. but this, I don't think that belongs in the main event, a totally predictable storyline. I don't think anybody thinks anything other than MJF turning is going to happen. And some of the stuff is just not funny unless you're a 16-year-old boy. And I'm not anymore. It's been a very long time. We discussed that earlier. So, they tried to get a little more serious today. And then MJF came with his high school insults. I know in your write-up you said that you're still trying to believe, but you almost sounded like you were trying to convince yourself more than anyone else. So how close are you to giving it up on this one?
I'm not close to giving up. I'm not confident it's going to work out. I'm not confident it won't. I just think it's in progress. I mean, I've been entertained in isolation, like just kind of isolating segments. I think the performance has been good, but I continue to express my concerns about it. I'm not manufacturing hope where I don't think there is any. I'm just not ready to like go, yeah, I know this is going to work. I mean, the one thing that I think is working better is than I think a lot of people anticipated is the fans aren't looking at Adam Cole as a fool. They're looking at Adam Cole as somebody who they're enjoying see have a good time with MJF, and they're enjoying it from an entertainment standpoint. And I don't know how that affects if MJF turns on Cole. If fans look at him and go, see, Roderick Strong and all of us were right all along, you were an idiot for believing him, or if there really is heat on MJF, because fans are going to be like, hey, you had a good thing going, Adam Cole opened his heart to you, you had no friend, you have no friends, he was willing to be a friend, and you blew it, and they don't blame Cole, because deep in their heart they think MJF has this side to him, and he just, for whatever reason, his ego or insecurities or whatever, won't actually let it last. So I don't know. I mean, Chris, your thoughts on that, and then I'll also throw, of course, to Tyler.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I don't have that same optimism. Generally, I do like to say, you know, let's just let things play out. But we've given this a real long time to play out, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere except that Adam Cole seems to be getting suckered in more and more. And you've been a real strong advocate in the past of not having stupid faces. The faces are supposed to outsmart the heels in the end, and it looks like that's what we have here is a stupid face. And that's what's worrying me, is that we're going to end up in a situation where, you know, he just falls for it.
Tyler, where are you on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the down the middle approach that we're talking about here, I would agree that makes Cole look dumb, right? I mean, the most logical thing is MJF hires Roddy to do something that, you know, ends up screwing Cole over. And at that point, I'm just hoping it's not the main event of both All In and All Out. I hope it's just one, and then we can move on from that story. But, you know, if they deviate at all from what the expectation that I think a lot of us have for this story, you know, I'm not saying you have to do a double turn, but, you know, as of right now, when all these segments in front of a live crowd are happening, MJF is the more over guy of the two of them. And even tonight, like, I found MJF entertaining as a viewer, and I found Cole to be a gaslighting, kind of controlling boyfriend type was his character tonight. And, you know, if they were to do somehow that double turn where, you know, Cole gets Roddy to turn on MJF at some point, and then he's booed as the heel and MJF is over as the babyface, is that the greatest thing for both those characters to do long-term? I don't know, but it'd be interesting, and the story would be at least a little bit more compelling to me because it subverted my expectations, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. And I think that Cole as a babyface is hurt by this whole engagement, and then MJF as well, how he's gone up and down and up and down the past year on getting cheered for weeks on end and then dipping back into being a heel. It just hasn't worked long term. I think it's going to be the definition of his title run if that is the case in the story here. And I just don't understand the unforced error of those characters. And, you know, they're in the main event, and this feels like the post MJF world title run to have kind of a fun little story on the side, not a major part in the middle of his or the end of his world title run. So I guess from that perspective, I just don't think it's worked at all from the characters, where they're going, and the legacy, especially of this title run for MJF.
Chris, back to you.
Yeah, that's the main stuff I wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
A couple quick points. I knew,
you know what? Before we move on, I'm sorry. What's the best case scenario that you see for this when it plays out? Like, what are you hoping based on where we are right now and the match coming up Saturday? What would, like, is there something that would, that you would think, okay, they saved this or they mitigated the damage or they won't do this, but if they did, it would make me okay with it?
I think the only way to get out of this, like, right now, you can't have FTR lose because then you have tag team champions who don't get along because they're about to fight each other for the world title. I think Strong has to get involved somewhere. The best way I think that they get out of this is that it's a plan all along between Cole and Strong to get in MJF's good graces, and then they both turn on him as he's about to turn on them, almost like a double cross. So they knew he was going to turn on them. Maybe he goes to hit him with the ring in the title match. Strong interrupts, and Cole wins the belt. But that's going down a lot of ifs, ands, or buts. But that's really the only way I can see this turning into anything that isn't a disaster.
And Tyler, before you move on to your next topic, Chris, what do you think about that? And where are you on, you know, what you think is going to happen, what should happen, and that kind of – and at that landing point for all this?
Yeah, for the most likely scenario of them, you know, I hope all that would happen in this – tag team title match, not in the world title match. I mean, you can have some shenanigans in that, but I'd like a defined heel and babyface going into that match, and you have, you know, 2 weeks to build that up going into the All-In show. If it's kind of muddled and you don't really know who to cheer for in front of, you know, the biggest show probably in company history, I think that's a big mistake. But yeah, some combination of that. I think it just depends, like, what do you want to do long-term with these characters, right? Do you want, you know, this to set up something at All Out? And, you know, for me personally, I think the time to turn MJF is probably right now. The old school adage of that is, you know, when the super over is a heel is when you turn babyface, and then you do the double turn because no one's expecting that because you've gotten yourself into that disposition. Hopefully that was the plan all along. If not, then that's a problem. But, you know, I'm also thinking, you know, MJF's a student of history. And is there any major angle in, you know, the history of wrestling that matches this? And, you know, it's not going to, you know, match it exactly, but it's probably going to rhyme with a story like that. So I'll rack my brain, try to see if I can think of any, because I'm just a student of history, and he's probably got some feud he loves from the 70s or 80s that he's masking, he's, you know, doing here, and it'll make more sense if you know what that is, but we'll see.
Yeah. All right, Chris, sorry to derail you from moving on to your next point.
No,
go ahead.
Please. You're the boss. So when they announced that Gravity was coming to the States, a friend of mine messaged me with the obvious joke that he was going to forget all about Park. And I knew by the time this week's Dynamite World rolled around, I would already be sick of the joke. And then they did it to death, all show, and I need them to stop and never mention it again. It was cringeworthy, and I like dad jokes. Anyway, that's just my pet peeve. Everybody should be reading the G1 recaps on pwtorch.com. There might be a guy who's incredibly talented and very well-spoken who's written a couple of them. So it's probably a good idea to go check those out and keep up on the G1.
Our G1 coverage, I think, has been really good this summer. So, check it out, pwtorch.com. I appreciate the plug, even if there was a percentage of it that was a little self-serving.
Self-serving? Me? Listen, it worked for Javier, okay? I've been around long enough to remember when he was doing the hits and misses or just the previews for something, and he used to call in every show. So it worked for him, right?
Yes.
All right, thanks for taking the call, gentlemen. You have a great evening.
Yeah, Chris. Thanks. Thank you, yep. All right. Always good hearing from Chris. All right. So we'll go to Derek in Utah next. Derek, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Kind of feel like I'm beating a dead horse because the last caller just talked about it. But my main concern is Adam Cole. And I'm having kind of is it just me moment where I'm not sure if I'm looking for validation or opposition, but much like you, I just like the way that you described it. The MJF Adam Cole relationship entertained in isolation. I think that's kind of the way I see it. But I'm not worried about what this is going to do with MJF because he'll always get a reaction. I think my main concern is what this does for Adam Cole, especially because when he came to AEW, I saw this as their next high level, maybe even their next top babyface. And I'm not worried about him looking stupid. I think what this has really done to Adam Cole, which I think is sometimes beyond repair, is when he was in NXT, Adam Cole was cool. I mean, he talked well. He had the good look. He had the guys who followed him. He was the leader of a faction, and he was an alpha. And now when we see Adam Cole, he's playing video games. He's sentimental. He's a sucker. He's a little too needy. I thought the verbiage he was using today had like some weird, estranged relationship vibes to it. And I'm just thinking at the end of this, no matter how it goes, I think Adam Cole will no longer be seen as a cool top-level alpha babyface. And once that gloss is off, I can't think of an example when it's ever came back since I've been watching wrestling. So your thoughts on that?
No, I've expressed those concerns, especially earlier in the storyline here. Tyler, I would say there's more to lose if Adam Cole was red hot and really over as a cool lead babyface. But something just wasn't at that level that people expected when he was signed. The idea that NXT did a really good job with Adam Cole featuring him, and he was a big deal there. And when AEW signed him, I think the feeling was, well, they'll know how to, you know, Cole can be a heel with this roster because he's so undersized compared to most top tier guys, height wise, and just, you know, overall, just kind of the physical sense of their, you should be intimidated by him. He's not imposing. He's not an imposing figure, but so I think that hurt him in WWE. And you can argue, oh, that shouldn't matter. But the reality isn't that would be it did. I think the thought was in AEW, well, he can play whatever role works best. And he'll shine, and he's this experienced veteran, and he's going to be around a bunch of people who kind of went on the same journey that he did, but they're earlier in it. And he'll be super valuable, and whether it's a face or a heel, and the fans might dictate that, it's going to be a great ride. And, you know, there's been things that haven't gone right. You know, he's been booked for title matches on the short term and lost momentum and was defined down. He seemed like the third priority in the Danielson Punk Cole signing era, and he had a big layoff due to the unfortunate injury. And so it's like what Derek's saying is true, and I expressed really similar sentiment early on in this, and it doesn't change that, but I don't think it's as high of a crime if Cole is sort of floundering anyway. And I think you're not losing something that was like red hot or on the verge of just being tweaked into becoming the Adam Cole that people thought we were getting a couple of years ago. So your thoughts on that aspect of this, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's impossible to argue that he is, you know, not as over as everyone thought he would be really at any point in his AEW run. Obviously, you laid out a lot of the reasons for that. But I think another reason why that's been the case is that almost his entire run, he's been, I think, miscast in what role he's in. I mean, besides him as a babyface against Jericho, that's basically his only premium babyface run in the first match with MJF, where he's a straight-up babyface, came back from injury, everyone's loving him, he's getting huge reactions and whatnot. You know, his whole run in the beginning, him being a heel kind of out of nowhere, I didn't think fit for where, you know, him premiering in a company the way he did fit. And obviously his stuff with Adam Page didn't help, and then everyone in his roster getting injured or having issues backstage and not getting re-signed with Bobby Fish in that way, and then Roddy not being available till too long was a bad combination. But yeah, I mean, I you know, when he first came in, even when he's come back from injury, it seemed like the trajectory of the MJF run was, you know, beat Danielson, you know, beat someone in the middle as like the two major feuds, and then that third major feud, you know, this time of year for All Out or All In, was to lose to Cole and have Cole be that next babyface champion and kind of go that back and forth seesaw that AEW does of heel babyface, and certainly don't think that's the capacity for him right now. So, you know, I think it's just a lot of events, but also, you know, him coming back, and this is not as much of a knock on him, but you can definitely tell there's a tepidness in the matches with MJF that went to a draw was good, but he's also not had an NXT style, you know, four and a half star match within AEW, which is part of his character. It's like if Kenny Omega didn't have the Ospreay match or, you know, lots of other matches, or Danielson didn't have, you know, and these are all just recent things, but they've all had good matches, MJF, Danielson, Omega being kind of the best workers there. So I think it's all a confluence of that. And is that confidence being lost by the way he was about to be used in WWE and had a crisis, et cetera? I don't know, but it's just not worked since the beginning. And I think you're seeing, depending what happens here, I think, you know, again, like you, I'm not assuming what's going to happen, but if MJF does end up beating him and what does he do next, it kind of, to me, is saying that Tony Khan feels similar to you and I, at least in this moment, that Adam Cole is a contender for the world title, but probably not a top tier guy that's going to be a world champion, at least anytime soon. So I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Derek, we said a lot there. What do you think? Anything to respond to there?
Well, I think my follow-up is if not Cole, who? Because what I see in AEW is it feels like they need a star on the rise who has the ability for fans to get on their journey, and it's their next top-level babyface who even can be disguised as a heel on the way up. And when I watch the WWE product, I listened to your commentary on it, there's this groundswell for LA Knight. There's these heels on the rise and Rhea Ripley and even Dominic and Damian Priest, who you're like, wow, but you know, there's momentum behind them where you're like, if they play this right, that can be a turn and that can be a top level guy. And then I watch the other channel, which has some really good creative wrestling, and I look at over the last 3 years, the people who I thought were on the rise, who were going to be this next top level star, and maybe even their next top level babyface, people like Adam Page, and then he became kind of the sulky cowboy, and then there was Wardlow, and that was the flame that burned out real quickly. And now I was like, well, it's going to be Adam Cole. And now it's pretty apparent to me, unless things change drastically, that it's not Adam Cole. And then I look through their roster of a whole bunch of talented wrestlers, and I say, well, then who? Like, who is next? So I guess my question for you guys to contemplate, and then I'll hang up, is if Adam Cole is not the next big AEW star, who is?
It's a really good question, and you framed it well. Tyler, do you have in your mind, like, the succession of the next three AEW world champions? Like, Hangman Page had that spot. Seems like he's in a completely different place now. It'd be tough to get him heated up to that level. I mean, in a way, I feel like he's just been defined down into a subdivision of Kenny and the Bucks without a real strong alpha demeanor, personality push. You know, Kenny Omega is getting up there, age-wise, but especially mileage-wise. But, you know, you can go back to him. Moxley, you can go back to, but Moxley does feel a little bit like he's going to be off to the side doing his thing, not a guy you would just lean on to be centerpiece. And I'm rehashing, and then there's Jericho. You know, I'm rehashing people who have held the title. So if, you know, you can go back to any of them. You can go to Cole if Bryan Danielson comes back healthy. You can give him a run. Nothing I think jumps out as, like, super exciting to any of those. None of those options are bad. The tone inflection being the key, but none of them are really good either. They don't freshen things up or create that sense of, hey, here's a new journey. So do you look to, you know, Miro, or do you go with Punk and just kind of hope that works? Or is there somebody younger and some name that we're just kind of skipping over here as we set up and throw to you for a response?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's not, you know, not me fantasy booking here, but doing the Tony Khan ology, I guess, of it all, and trying to think how he thinks. And if you look, it's for the most part, it's been kind of seasoned former world champion, and then maybe taking a chance on a guy who's not been a world champion on North American television. And that's kind of been the ebb and the flow. Right now we're on the MJF first time as a champion on cable TV. So the next one feels to me like it's going to be a CM Punk type where, you know, he's never had that run. And if things are still good, Tony Khan probably wants to get that run out of Punk at some point. You know, does that make more sense for him to do it as a heel? I think so. I think you can get there pretty easily, depending on what you do with Punk and Cole. So that seems to me what's going to be the next thing. And then after that, it seems to be the opportunity would then be to get a new guy. And right now at the moment, you know, July 26th, 2023, as, you know, the caller alluded to, Tony Khan ebbs and flows a lot on guys, and they're hot for a couple weeks, and then he kind of loses interest in them from a booking standpoint. And as of right now, I would say Darby Allin is the guy who's not been a champion that feels the most likely to get that spot, get elevated into that spot. You know, a little less than that would be Orange Cassidy, but I'd say one of those two have the best chance of guys who are quote-unquote on the rise, are not WWE guys that could be world champion if you book it correctly. I think Darby way more so than Orange. And then also, I think Brian Danielson is going to be champion at some point, whether he really cares to be or not. I think Tony Khan's definitely going to want him to be his champion of his company at some point. So I would say those three, Punk, Darby, Danielson, and maybe no particular order, but those seem to me to be the next three world champions if you're not going to do a retread the way Tony Khan books.
Is there anyone in the tag division right now that you'd go with? And I'm going to pluck out names that I don't think are like crazy, but I also don't think they're great. Nick Jackson, Max Caster, Colton Gunn, Penta, Eddie Kingston. I don't know if anyone else is coming to mind who's in locked in the tag division right now, who I'd even – Brody King. I'll throw him in too, I guess. I don't know. I mean, if you looked at a chart of the tag division, I don't know if you would go, well, I'd trade him for him. Maybe there's one or two names you would. But do any of those strike you as, oh, yeah, they're not really on our radar. But, yeah, that might work.
I'm going to add a guy you didn't say, but Jay White, I mean, he's locked in the tag division currently, but he was super, super, super protected in that 58-minute match against FTR, and I think that was a sign of Tony Khan activating him, so I would add him to that group that I said earlier.
Yeah, that's an oversight on all of our parts, because actually, he actually should be like the first name we mentioned in terms of someone who hasn't had the title, but has checked all the boxes of somebody that you would go with. If MJF turned babyface and a heel Jay White beat him, that could be a good progression, whether it's in 2 months or a year.
And I think I've avoided that just because I think when he signed, at least for me, I talked a lot about him being this guy who could be world champion, and Tony Khan didn't use him in that way, and he wasn't really showing it before that match with FTR. So I don't want to be like, hey, one good match, cool, we're back on this narrative that we've created as a wrestling apparatus. So I kind of wanted to avoid that. But I mean, if your question is, do I think Tony Khan will go with any of those people? And it's like ever in the history of the company, I'd say, you know, maybe Max Caster would be the only one I could think of, but I don't think Penta, I don't think Nick Jackson, I don't think Brody King, I don't think anyone of that is, you know, I think Brody King could compete for a title. I think Penta could compete for a title on a branded episode of Dynamite per se, but I don't think any of them would ever be world champion, at least to Tony Khan, if you're just giving me those names. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, people get hot and, you know, LA Knight took him 20 years and working TNA and NWA and all that stuff, and then years in NXT changing his name, and then he finally got a one-word phrase over, and now he's there. So wrestling is weird, and people get over at weird times. So it's hard to say no about anybody, but from a charisma standpoint, I'd say Max would have the best chance to – he's been hot already once. I think he's got a lot of upside on that front that, like, you know, a younger version of LA Knight, you know, works a safe style that's not – crazy impressive, but is super over and charismatic. So I think he's a good comp as someone that could rise at some point.
So people aren't yelling at us. We got some pillars we didn't mention. Sammy Guevara, Jack Perry. I will throw in Ricky Starks, who doesn't want to be a pillar, but he's a name that we'd have been mentioning a year or two ago. And so far we haven't. So I'll throw his name out there. And you had already mentioned Darby. I think he's a, you know, we had a question on that last week, and I mean, I think Darby is a candidate, and his promos, and he went from this, you know, recluse introvert to this sort of alpha leader who is a spokesman among the top tier people right now. It's crazy seeing that transformation. But what about Jack Perry, Sammy Guevara, or Ricky Starks? Do any of them jump out as people who haven't been world champ yet, but should absolutely be mentioned in, you know, whatever cluster of top names we're settling on?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ricky's kind of that Wardlow type too, start and stop with him from a booking standpoint. Tony Khan's interested in him, and you know, I think that might be some outside the ring stuff, the what's up going on with the contract sort of thing. And I certainly, my mind when I was going through the catalog, Sammy and Jack Perry were on my list, but I definitely did not include them. I think if you were to fuse, this is, I mean, going to be mean, but if you fused babyface Sammy Guevara and heel Jack Perry, I think that might be one of the least charismatic wrestlers of all time if you combine that as one person. So they just don't have, at least right now, I mean, I think the Jack Perry thing is a pretty much an utter disaster, at least for me, as a heel. And I think Sammy, I think if you were to add, like, Tony Khan has a lot more faith in Sammy maybe than any of the other pillars, including Darby, but he just has not delivered in lots of spots given to him beyond, you know, he's super talented in the ring. I just don't think he's that next level guy at this point to ever be considered a world champion at this time. But like I said, you know, wrestling's weird, and I hope both of them prove me wrong. If they hear this and they become the most over guys as heels and baby faces, then I'm happy to be wrong about that as well.
All right, Derek, back to you for any follow-up or anything else.
The only name that really stuck out to me of the list that you guys proposed was Jay White. And I think he has some untapped potential, but I think this is the shortcoming of focusing on in-ring product instead of story, is I think they're having a hard time getting past trying to have, you know, important, good matches instead of building stories and characters where fans want to get behind someone's journey. And some of the journeys that I think that we're on, like, believe me, when they started AEW, I would have been the last guy who would say that I would be a fan of Orange Cassidy. But it's almost by accident, it seems like they put him on a journey as the injured defending champion who is true to his character, but when he turns it on and really wants to fight, you can tell the title means something to him. And that's a story that I'm behind that almost happened on accident. But do I think that story is going to lead to a main event, next level star? I don't. It's more of a side story that has appeal, but I don't think it leads to a growing viewership and a growing audience. And I think, you know, this is the key is, you know, I was a guy who always said that I preferred in-ring action than everything, but I think in the last year, probably maybe even 2 years, I'll say that if the in-ring action is not surrounded by a good story, it doesn't become appointment viewing for me anymore. And a lot of AEW, I watch it if I'm there at home, which is a lot. But if I miss it, it's not something I catch up on because I see so many good matches over the course of a week, a month, a year, that missing a good match isn't a big deal anymore. Sitting down and watching a moment or a next chapter in a story, that becomes appointment viewing. And I'm just speaking for myself, but that's kind of how I see it.
I think that's well put, and it's an aspect. And I think you would agree, Derek, that is not on the top of Tony Khan's strengths as a booker, and it's one of the frustrations for people who look for what you look for in the AEW product.
Oh, completely, and I agree with it. And then I also kind of look at it this way is. For a long time, I was an indie wrestler, so what appealed to me is good indie matches because it was like, oh, I respect that guy. I love that match. Oh, those guys are really good workers. Oh, look at that spot. Look at that spot. And, you know, over the last 3-4 years, I've slowed wrestling down to the point where I'm old now, so I don't wrestle at all. And now I just think it's the story that draws me in as a fan. You know, I'm not watching for, oh, I'm going to steal this move or this spot anymore. I'm just watching it as I watch any television program. And being able to step back and see it from that perspective, it's changed a lot for me, where a lot of the stuff that used to be the most appealing became the stuff that I watched because I respected what the guys did in the ring and kind of forgot of what made me a fan in the first place, which was not great matches. It was over-the-top characters who, to me, appealed to me as cool or I could live vicariously through, and I don't see that in the AEW product. I see a lot of guys who are highly accomplished wrestlers with a lot of creativity who sometimes I think try too hard and take a lot of shortcuts to get responses that the fans would give them anyway because the fans want to give them that response. And so kind of a changing perspective of me over the last few years. And now I sit back, I'm like, tell me a good story that I can get behind, because that's what I want to see in my wrestling. And I don't know if to me, I see Tony Khan as the same kind of fan I was. I mean, we're almost the same age. I might be a year older. He might be somewhat older. But I was that ECW, WWF fan, love all that hardcore stuff now. And now I just kind of see some of it as excessive. And so I hope as a booker, he matures that way too, where it's about the story. It's not about having your guys take lots of risks and do lots of creative, crazy, and risky moves. Because I think that's got a short duration and a short lifespan that doesn't lead to overall growth. So I know I'm being long-winded, but
yeah.
I think I'll end now. Sorry.
All right. Thanks, Derek. No, I mean, your voice is important in AEW's growth and what you're saying and what you look for and your perspective and, you know, following some of the same things Tony Khan has, but what you're looking for now is important. And your demographic is an important part of AEW growing. Tyler, what do you think about what Derek had to say there?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely valid. And I think it's, you know, also a combination of, if you look tonight's AEW versus, let's say, you know, Monday's Raw, right? I mean, the Judgment Day were a group that were, you know, not super important, and now they are throughout the entire three hours of Raw and feel like a very important group and four distinct characters that all mean a lot. And if you look at the AEW, you know, that's the strength of WWE is the storytelling, and the strength of AEW on paper is the in-ring wrestling. And tonight, you know, some okay matches, some less than okay matches, I thought. And, you know, it's just when you rely on good matches, you know, you have five matches on the card and all in four out of five have to be pretty good to maintain that level of brand recognition, I guess. It's easy for that to go away as opposed to the alternative of storytelling. And obviously I think that's the right way to view wrestling, as an episodic story that has simulated fighting to advance the story, to complete the story. But the in-between is missing, and WWE is firing on all cylinders from what they are good at, and AEW is just doing an okay job at what they are known for. So I think that's really the correlation I would see between the two of them. And, you know, there's points where AEW is going to have awesome wrestling, and WWE is going to have some subpar storytelling, and we might flip this conversation and do it several times over the next decade, but that's just kind of where we are right now in the cycle.
Yes. All right. Very good. If you are listening to this conversation and you want to join in, give us a call, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We don't have anyone else who's pushed 1, so if you do, you can be next. But we will jump to an email here, and I'm seeing if anything picks up on where we left off. Nope, so we'll start with Zach in Texas. He says, I largely enjoyed the show tonight. Orange Cassidy has to be in consideration for Wrestler of the Year, given the portfolio of quality matches he's put together week after week. Kenny Omega is probably in the lead, given the two extraordinary matches he had with Will Ospreay, but OC needs to be discussed. Darby Allin is a special talent. He can wrestle like Mick Foley circa 92 1 minute and get super technical the next. He and Swerve are perfect dance partners. I assume it's going to be him, Nick Wayne, and Sting against Swerve, Air Fox, and Brian Cage at All In. I'm ready to see which way this Cole MJF story goes. I'm pretty sure MJF is turning, but I'm not 100%. Tonight, I came away thinking it's actually possible that Adam Cole and Roderick Strong might be running a scam on Max. Now, that would be an interesting direction to take. My biggest issue with the show was the announcement of another Battle Royal on Rampage. Jason Paul is complaining about that over at ProWrestling.net, too. Rampage is a problem. TK is just finding stuff to stick on there, whether it makes sense or not. If they can't get rid of Rampage, maybe let Bryan Danielson and Renee revive Talking Smack under a different name, of course. Rampage did decent numbers last couple of weeks. It's not collapsing in the era of Collision. So, Zach hit a number of topics there. All are worth hitting on, at least briefly. First up, AEW Wrestler of the Year, Orange Cassidy or Kenny Omega. Are those the top two? Would you add someone else to the list? Is there an obvious one who leapfrogs them?
I mean, you know, I don't get a ton into awards They're so subjective.
I know.
You'd have to say MJF has been champion the entire time. You could say CM Punk, he started a whole new show. So it just depends what you deem important. I think Zach's obviously going for in-ring acumen. I think Bryan Danielson is right up there too with the Okada match and then the Iron Man match with MJF. You know, MJF in that conversation too, having a lot of good matches, that match with Danielson, the match with Adam Cole. So, you know, if you take that perspective, I think that is where you would want to be. But, we'll see where we are. We're just halfway through the year. I would just say if you're on Dynamite or Collision every week, and the show's built around you, and that's been MJF more than anybody, I would say that's the most important person. But, Wrestler of the Year might be different to each and every person. But, again, I don't really get into that a ton.
Yeah, yep. He also brought up Darby, special talent. Do you agree that we might be heading to – I mean, obviously we got Darby and Nick against Swerve and Air Fox. Do you think they had Sting and Brian Cage, and that becomes the All-In match? We got – a reference to All In and Wembley Stadium at the very beginning of the show, the road to All In begins, and then we got not another mention, and it didn't even cross my mind for 1 hour and 59 minutes. I didn't think of it again. So some empty, what turned out to be sort of empty words there. I mean, technically we're on the road, but, you know, it's a windowless road right now because we got nothing. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, to compare with Raw, right? We basically got the whole Raw SmackDown, or the whole Raw SummerSlam match lineup on Monday. And this, you know, you get a little bit, like, you could see the breadcrumbs of Darby and Nick Wayne versus Swerve and AR Fox. You saw, you know, Cole MJF. You see Moxley and Orange Cassidy is probably going to happen there as well. So, you know, it's there. They just didn't explicitly say it. But that's kind of the AEW way. And as we've talked about a lot tonight, you need to explicitly say things from time to time so people can get excited for them. But, yeah, and then the question on Darby, I think, was the other point there. Yeah, I mean, he's super talented. He's gotten over time. You know, you go from the first time he really got over was his, you know, him being handcuffed in the last 10 minutes against, you know, Chris Jericho, to where he's been now and ebb and flowing and, just being a guy who's now, as we presume, Sting will not be wrestling a ton. His contract's up this December. We'll see what happens. I think he's still valuable if you can use him from time to time, but it's now seeming like Darby is transitioning into a guy who's in that Sting role and being the leader of a group. And, I think that's important. I think he's shown that, and he's obviously super skilled in the ring. He's gone from crash test dummy to a guy who can work a smart style and then have a couple high spot moves throughout the match. I think he's really matured in his wrestling style from where, you know, you thought every match might be his last, or every video he shows where he's jumping off a bridge, you know, like, okay, well, if you see something horrible happen to Darby, you're not going to be shocked. To him seeming to grow up in front of our eyes, I think, is super important.
Yes. All right. He also brought up MJF and Cole. We talked about that already. What about Cole and Strong gamming MJF? That's a big swerve based on how I think the majority of people are watching this angle play out. Is it plausible to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's plausible in the fact that you have to then turn Cole and Roderick Strong, and Cole has obviously been a heel within AEW, so it's not out of the question. And, you know, they've set up especially the most humanizing thing they've done with Max is him saying he doesn't have any friends and they're playing games.
Yeah.
And now Cole really laying in, hey, you're one of my best friends now. And, like, if you look back and did the WWE-style video package before the match, you could see Cole saying, hey, like, no, man, I'm your friend, to them going, like, hey, you're one of my best friends, and really, like, dragging him along and making Max feel like he actually does have a friend for once in his life. And, you know, FTR saying, no one loves you, everyone leaves you, like, that being a potential breadcrumb, I'm not saying it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if they did all of that and it worked out that way, I think that's good storytelling in hindsight. But it's not the most obvious road to travel down. And then there's a lot that needs to happen. But as we talked earlier, I think Cole being a heel is not a utter disaster either, because if he does all this, looks dumb, and did a lot of heel things with MJF, and then he's like, oh, hey, you were, you know, not my friend all along, that sucks. You know, that's, I think, worse for Cole in the long run than him being a scumbag, as he was for when he was cool, he was a scumbag. So I think that works for him a lot more. And, you know, he can also utilize a lot of the tactics that a lot of wrestlers in AEW have done, where you come out, you don't do the Adam Cole Bebe, you don't do the boom, you know, you tease you're going to do that, and then you say, cut off my music, and everyone boos you. You know, there's, I mean, not to go deep into the Cole character here, but I think there's a lot of potential for that story to happen. I just don't want to give everyone's hopes up that that is going to happen and that the straight down the middle is more likely to happen. So I hope I answered your question there at some point.
Yeah, definitely. So then the Battle Royal, taking Battle Royal and Rampage, you know, is TK just, it's kind of the end of his booking energy bar. You know, not the thing you eat, but the thing on the screen. And he's at the end of it, and it's like, oh, that's right, Rampage. Ah, Battle Royal. Like, it just feels like, and not only is it, does he go there too often, and it's just, but it's sort of like this, Hail Mary, hey, it's not just some meaningless matches that will be good or some lower card storylines that if you're really into it, you should watch. But there's something that has ramifications that's going to fill a lot of TV time easily for us. And, I mean, you know, I mean, that's Rampage. I mean, I don't think we should spend a lot of time fretting over it, honestly, because it is the fifth hour of AEW in primetime cable. I think the issue is, should we continue to determine who gets a title shot based on things like Battle Royals rather than just you have all this time for wrestlers to win and lose matches? Why not have that be the way that, you know, you decide who gets the title shot is people who win the match that is very closely resembles the match you need to participate in to actually win the title. I feel like we're having a bunch of shot put competitions to decide who the high jumper is when we do battle royals to determine who the 2-on-2 tag team champs are.
Yeah. I mean, you could even in that same capacity, you could have a, you know, 3-week tournament that happens on Rampage to determine the number one contender.
Yeah,
Brilliant. And, you know, you have a
brilliant title.
Yeah,
Why did someone say that? Matches that determine. Yeah.
Yeah, not that, you know, you can lean on tournaments, too, as a gimmick too much, too. So you can't just have Rampage be the tournament show. But, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I think, you know, what the rating is, there's probably a way to be creative and make that the not AEW dark, but, like, hey, we saw AR Fox change, right? So let's give him a 20-minute match to really showcase himself against another person at his same stature, and you have a competitive match, and he builds himself up. Same thing you could have done with Nick Wayne or Action Andretti or really anyone that's kind of come on the scene, felt important, and established them. You know, if you know, Santana comes back at some point, him and Ortiz are now a unit again, you need to reestablish them. You can have Rampage be kind of the landing spot for the up-and-comers who, you know, are kind of going to get the mini jetpack put on their back as like, hey, let's see AR Fox. After watching this episode of Dynamite, I want to see him in the main event of something, or this returning star, or Eddie Kingston's back from the G1 and he's now stronger and tougher, et cetera, and I want to see him. You know, you can do that in a way that doesn't signal that, hey, this is kind of a proving ground for people that are not at the top of the card, but also make it somewhat watchable for, hey, we're going to focus on this person for a couple weeks here. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots to do there, but, you know, obviously not having the fifth hour would be the best option for a viewer and honestly for the booker. So it is what it is.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to the next email. Zach, as always, thank you for participating. Let's see here. Mark that as answered. Otherwise, there it is. I won't go back to it in a few minutes here. Azan from St. Louis says, how much input do you think Darby has been having in creative on Dynamite? I get the feeling it's been strong with videos on Nick Wayne and AR Fox, and even the video for Hook tonight feels like something out of Darby's mind. Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to find out if Darby was doing more than just his own stuff. And I haven't seen that reported. I don't know if that's true, but I think it's been interesting. It's not a crazy guess when you look at the product. Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that a lot tonight, but that's also kind of why I think he has the chance to elevate as a top-tier star, too, if you're just the human nature of it, right? If you're someone that you're let's say, a manager, let's say Tony Khan's a manager, and you have Darby's your guy who's going above and beyond and making your life easier, you're probably going to do things to help him out and get him moved up the chain of the corporate ladder, right? So, you know, humans are essentially all built the same, and if Darby's doing stuff that makes the show better and his life easier – on top of being over in a good wrestler, I think that there's a lot of potential for him to get upward trajectory as a result. So, yeah, I think that's certainly of possibility that he is taking more of an ownership role creatively on Dynamite specifically. But even, you know, on Collision, he's the one out there trying to get, you know, if you're Tony Khan, you break glass in case of emergency to get CM Punk over as a babyface. You have Darby out there and be like, this is my buddy, cheer for him. And it kind of worked, but that's the best, you know, option you have with CM Punk in certain towns. So I think that also proves a lot about his value to Tony Khan as well.
Okay. He also said, how do you guys feel about Jared Lynn getting his biggest national spotlight in 22 years? I know Wade and him were coming up together during the indie scene of the 90s in Minnesota, late 80s, actually. Yeah, and we already covered that as on, and so I will skip over that. We'll move to, James in Clemson said, I think that I had Jungle Boy's new song as my ringtone in 2009. It's so bad. What do you think about going with the 90210 theme song as his heel intro music? Tyler?
Are we saying Beethoven's Fifth is a bad song, or just it doesn't work for Jungle Boy? That is like probably the most classic piece of music ever written.
I am going to assume that he means it's bad for a heel wrestler, and it would be quite the controversial hot take. Can it be a hot take?
Yeah.
Beethoven's is not. I think he just means it's not bad. It's not good for driving heel heat for a wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like kind of you need to do the Tommaso Ciampa where he came out to no music, right? If you're going to do that, go all the way. But, you know, it is public domain, so at least it didn't cost Tony Khan, you know, anything to license the song. So that's good.
It helps average out the price of some other ones.
Yeah, and MJF is also public domain, if you guys didn't know that. So that's also a cost saver right there, too. So, yeah, I mean, I just think the character's not working, you know, is – the song, that might be fifth or sixth on the list of things that aren't working with Jack Perry. So, yeah, it's not working. It also, I don't know if it's everywhere, but there's definitely local, like, bankruptcy law firm commercials where I live that uses that exact, like, intro. So I always think of, like, you know, watching The Price is Right midday when I was sick from school and that commercial comes up. So it's not a good correlation there either. And that kind of feels like the capacity of Jack Perry is daytime commercials at this point. So again, I've ragged on him a lot, but yeah, this, the character's not working. So the song doesn't help, but if he had the most awesome song of all time, I don't think that would be getting him over as a heel either.
There's nothing worse than a wrestler standing in the ring because they think they're about to get big heat and that big heat doesn't come.
Yeah.
And then they just wait two extra beats longer than they should before getting back to business. And his pace just isn't where it needs to be. He's, you know, not polished on the mic. I don't think he doesn't come across as a likable person pretending to be unlikable. Like, he genuinely comes across as kind of like a guy who would probably be a real jerk to you if you met him outside the ring. And I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying he's successful in that way. Like, it's not that I don't buy him as an arrogant, full of himself jerk, but he's just not compelling on the microphone as a heel. Everything is just very, you know, you buy a magic kit for like your 7-year-old nephew or something and off the shelf at, you know, a game store or Target or something. And it's just, you know, it's like the kind of inferior version, cheap version of like, you know, 10 of the most popular little magic tricks that kids do. Like, that's his heel promo. It's like the magic kit for $14.95 off the shelf at Target or $29.95, whatever. It's none of it's good, but it's what everybody does when they aren't really polished as a heel and they just want to think, they think that's what heels do. And his instincts haven't been good, even as a babyface on promos. He doesn't come into this coming across as this really smart student of the game who's bringing something, who's learned from the past, but is bringing something, you know, good instincts based on years of not just watching and enjoying, but studying. And, you know, it's the opposite of MJF. You know, I mean, MJF just comes, like you said, with all this institutional knowledge of what pro wrestling historically is, and he can pluck from different things. And maybe Jack Perry can tell you who the order of all the Mid-Atlantic champions in the 80s. I don't know, but he's not emulating any particular heels effectively so far. And yeah, and it's unfortunate because sometimes a heel turn can spark somebody who's average on the mic, but he's had bad instincts and wasn't good. And now he's just doing the low hanging fruit heel promo approach and not very well. All right, on to JB from Detroit. One, I think everyone's reading this MJF Cole take him angle completely wrong. Everyone seems to think Cole's going to end up being a dumb baby face when MJF inevitably turns on him, but I think Cole knows this to be the case the entire time and will be prepared for MJF's turn and turn the table, pun intended. So there's another angle, which is Colt tells Roddy, I couldn't let you in on it, but I knew all along. I appreciate you coming to my side, but come on, I'm smarter than that. I could tell MJF, you know, shot me looks and said things that were insincere and all that stuff. I knew all along, and you know what? I got him to gift me a title shot, which, by the way, gifting me is the wrong word because I earned it, but I'm getting a title shot. He said, I get it. I don't know. I mean, is that another road they could take or that they've already planned to take?
Yeah, I mean, it's potential there. I mean, and there's some breadcrumbs for that. I mean, early on, there was a line that Cole said to Roddy that, you know, MJF doesn't watch the show back after it airs, so we can say whatever we want here and he'll never know. And that could be, you know, you could say that that was kind of a red herring that he knows MJF watches every episode back. And so Roddy acting the way he did, he knew MJF would watch it and believe it, that they were not getting well, getting on together. You know, you're getting pretty in the convoluted zone for what's been established here in the story. It's yeah. At least not down the middle and interesting, but you know, if you would at least say Cole is being a guy who has some agency in this whole thing. And it's not just, you know, a putz who's along for the ride and thought he could change MJF. And in the end is the, is kind of the, that toxic boyfriend that he's kind of portraying in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. That's not a great framing, which is, you know, it's just not a putz. Like that's the goal now at the end. Well, it wasn't a putz. All right, number two. This isn't especially Dynamite related, but I keep hearing people say that collision ratings will nosedive when college football starts. And while it's certainly true, they will take a hit. That isn't nearly the entire picture. WBD all but already said they know this will be the case. They aren't stupid. It's being said that they care more about where collision ranks compared to other shows in the same time slot rather than total overall viewership. So this is almost completely independent of CFB. Also, while CFB is undoubtedly very popular, it still pales in comparison to the popularity of the NFL and is a much more regional product. I'm not convinced that it will affect collision ratings as much as some are assuming it will. I think, like, it's a big deal if Collision loses viewers, no matter how Warner Brothers is looking at this, because you've got your top paid guy in CM Punk and a bunch of other top paid people who are almost exclusively on that show. They're going to be on pay-per-views, and you're asking the people who watch Dynamite to care about something that they're not watching when it comes to ordering a pay-per-view or buying a ticket. They need to fill buildings for collision tapings. They need people watching the show. No matter what's going on elsewhere on cable, they need people watching Collision for it to be worth CM Punk's contract and to sell tickets and to sell pay-per-views. But it's not entirely it's absolutely worth saying that Warner Brothers does have low expectations for a Saturday night show. So it's a little complex. Tyler, what's your guess on the impact of college football on a Saturday night primetime wrestling show?
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's a couple ways to look at this. The main one, if you want to do like the rosy picture of Collision, is that they are competing with other shows on cable, right? They're not Fox. They're not, you know, SmackDown on Fox if that was on Saturday night. Because a vast majority of college football games that are going to be on primetime are going to be on NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox. They all have packages. And ESPN is the only one that's a cable company that's going to have they have SEC games, which is the most popular region and the most popular conference for college football. So they get the second or third best game in that conference going to be on ESPN at night. So that's going to undoubtedly beat Collision. But I think there's not a ton of options on cable besides that. You know, there's regional, there's Big Ten Network, there's the Pac-12 Network, there's Fox Sports One, et cetera. So those all have some lesser games that I think Collision could beat in a demo standpoint. It's still football, and there's still an older demo that watches whole football games. So I think Collision could still be a top five show for sure. And if you're Warner Brothers Discovery, your reruns of, you know, Star Wars movies and Fast and the Furious, et cetera, we're not going to be top five cable television shows throughout the year. So that would be the win, but certainly there's going to be people that are not watching Collision live and maybe watch it later. And to your earlier point there of getting people to buy pay-per-views, et cetera, is going to be hurt because they're going to be focused on other things. Just like this time of year should be, you know, this is a whole nother topic and I don't mean to derail it so we don't have to get there, but like, I'm very surprised that both wrestling companies don't kind of go all out, no pun intended, this time of year when you're not competing against football,
yeah.
or basketball or hockey, that everyone just kind of takes the time off. And this is really the only sport in town if you're not watching baseball. And, you know, to build that audience, you should be doing it right now, not kind of be doing middling stuff. And I think WWE is doing a way better job this year to gain that audience, and you see that paying off during this time of year. So, yeah, that's kind of my cable spiel.
Yes.
My rating spiel, I should say.
No, it makes sense. I mean, SummerSlam's a big show. All In, All Out are big shows. I don't think they should look at this as, well, we're kind of saving our big stuff for later. That said, you've got to have some big stuff to be able to compete with everything else starting, you know, in August with preseason and then September for regular season NFL games, followed by NHL and NBA shortly thereafter. There's a lot going on in baseball playoffs. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot. All right, number three, over the last several weeks, I feel as though Darby Allin has done a phenomenal job elevating likes of the debuting Nick Wayne, his former trainer, A.R. Fox, tonight. Even CM Punk on last week's Collision. I had no interest in the OC-Fox match before the night, but the Darby video package really got me behind Fox and had me at least somewhat invested in him succeeding. No reason was given as to why Fox would turn on Darby and join the Mogul Embassy. We don't even really know who Fox is outside of the feel-good Darby promo. Yeah, there should be follow-up, right? I mean, it shouldn't just be Fox was frustrated with losing. I mean, there's got to be more to it than that, where he would completely go against his friend Darby and join this other group. I hope, as much as I'm sort of, you know, praising to an extent, like taking a talented guy like A.R. Fox and giving him a week where it establishes his character, and it's not like he's going to be a top guy, but he's got a sense of purpose now to be on TV every week. Yeah, give us more. Give us more of an explanation for that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's an easy story to tell, I would say, because, you know, Darby was in AEW a long time before A.R. Fox, and A.R. Fox is not signed to a major company that, you know, he couldn't be signed. So you could do that whole angle. While I don't think it's true in real life, you could see how Fox would be like, hey, you didn't bring me on immediately and you let me sit here and I got signed by, you know, Tony Khan saw me at an indie show and he signed me and you had nothing to do with it. So don't take credit for, you know, I bailed you out and you didn't bail me out when I needed you. You know, there's that story to tell. I think it could be a powerful heel story to tell that is, you know, misguided and partially true, and would get you to understand why he's so frustrated. But, you know, would I bet on that to happen with A.R. Fox? Does he feel like he's that level of character that gets an explanation? Probably not. But I hope that he does.
All right. Up next, what do we think of the A.R. Fox heel turn? Is he going to be getting a push, perhaps a few starting with Darby? Are we getting Mox versus OC for the international title at All In or All Out? So we talked a lot, I think enough about A.R. Fox and Darby, but of course he'll be feuding with Darby in some form. Mox versus OC, yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the direction they're going. And that's fine. They put a lot into Orange Cassidy. He should be against a top guy in a feud and not just weekly TV matches.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting from a booking standpoint of, you know, do you want Moxley to have that title? Does that elevate the title, or does that feel like kind of a demotion for Moxley? I think Cassidy has built it up in a good way. You know, and also Moxley does not really lose to people in singles matches. When he does, it's a huge deal. So, you know, you could use that to elevate Orange Cassidy to another level, or do you do kind of the, you know, WWE style where you lose your title and then you move up the card sort of thing. So a lot of interesting meta things to talk about there, but I think Moxley and Cassidy also could have a pretty fun match one-on-one. So I think that could be a sneaky dark horse contender for you know, could be match of the night for some people.
Then up next, JB says, fantastic slimy heel tactics of Don Callis pitting Jericho against his current stablemates. We've probably been given that segment enough attention in the developments in Jericho Appreciation Society with Ty Conti and Anna Jay and even Angela Parker and Matt Menard. Kind of walking out on Jericho going, you know, and Jericho's like, this isn't easy. And Menard's just like, yeah, it is. Think about it. And walks away. I think there's enough with Jericho and Don Callis in their history where you can more so, but not totally understand Jericho being, you know, kind of having nostalgia and warm fuzzies about, oh, Don Callis, my longtime friend. There's more to that than there is MJF and Cole. So, you know, if Jericho's going to be a babyface at the end of this, he started as a heel. He was tempted by a heel who's manipulating him, who he has a history with, and then maybe ultimately goes face. That's better than Cole being a face, being manipulated, by a heel, getting, you know, sucked into it naively, and then getting turned on when his guard shouldn't be down, and then we're supposed to cheer for him again. That's kind of the worst case scenario with Cole. So with Jericho, what do you think of what you're seeing here, kind of broadly in a macro sense with the Don Callis storyline and the JAS, but also start specifically with the painting tonight and, you know, the latest attempt by Callis to get Jericho convinced that the best route for him is to be part of the Callis family.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty down on this in general for a number of reasons. Main one being that, you know, like we talked with, you know, some of the, like with Wardlow and who else? With Ricky Starks kind of being up and down on the booking pattern. And, you know, Don Callis was the biggest heel in the company. And there's not a lot of follow-up on the turning on Kenny. You know, the way to get Takeshita and Kenny both over as a result of the heat that Don Callis has provided, I think has been underutilized. The way Jericho's framed, you know, he has the built-in character trait of being deceitful as a heel and a babyface. So he's more believable than Cole that he's outsmarting somebody at all junctions, whether he's, you know, good or bad. So that's kind of more built into his character. But I have not loved his portrayal of himself the last 2 or 3 weeks where he feels like a deer in the headlights. He doesn't really know anything that's going on. I don't think that's the greatest way to present him. And he has
He looks worn out, too, by all this. Like, he's wearing the stress of the situation on his face. And I guess it serves the storyline in a way, but it also makes you wonder, you know, what does he have left?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be mean, but if anyone saw the Mitch McConnell video tonight of him kind of staring off in space, he matched that sort of demeanor, which is not super, super good. But so, and I think there's a reason too that, you know, you kind of led the show with that the most important storyline tonight long-term, and then kind of no other caller or emailer has brought it up until this point. And I feel like that is another reason why this is not working tremendously well. Not even, you know, losing the heat, but, you know, that's just kind of a standard thing in AEW in different ways, shapes and forms. But, you know, just like Christian Cage being super over as a heel and then disappearing for weeks on end, I think that was the same thing as Don Callis, where, you know, if Callis had been super over as a heel as he was and recruited Jungle Boy when he saw that he was having an attitude change, could elevate Jungle Boy and get booed like crazy like he was week in and week out, and then put that heat over onto Jungle Boy as an associate, I think that's a much better story than what they're doing here with Jericho and Callis. So, you know, in the end, is Jericho a babyface? And then these members of JAS are going to end up being babyface with him and saving him in some way, shape, or form. That's a fine story to tell, but it doesn't feel, you know, it feels like the seventh most important thing in AEW right now. I think it's kind of being treated as such.
Is there any chance that after Perry versus Lynn that Taz gets involved? He's tied to the story both by Hook and the ECW FTW title he created. Perhaps we get Taz against Jack Perry at All In or All Out. I mean, Taz has been pretty steadfast in not returning to the ring. He does not want to deal with any neck issues that are going to reduce his quality of life. Doesn't mean he can't apply a quick Taz mission onto Perry. And then, you know, Perry, I don't know, Taz is going to want to lose a one return match. I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, does Taz get in Hook's corner? You know, maybe. I don't really – yeah, I mean, the Perry thing is like a face-to-face next week with Perry and Lynn. So, you know, Lynn takes a beating, and then Hook runs out for the save. I mean, it seems like that's – it's just going to be an angle to set that up. And my guess, Tyler, is Hook – I'm sorry, Taz stays in the announce desk.
Yeah, I would think the only reason – only way you could use Taz is if you could, you know, have him – get beat up in front of Hook as a way to like elevate Hook and get him to lock in and take out Jack Perry. But, you know, one thing about this, I was hoping that, you know, a way to make this promo good as a heel and for me as a viewer is if Jack Perry would have, you know, thrown the FTW title in the trash tonight and said, this is not a real title, as he kind of did. But, you know, I think just less titles on the show would be great. And that would make sense for him as a heel to be like, yeah, I was going to win gold, but this is not a real title. This is a bygone garbage era, and I'm the new era. There's just, like, so many things that were easy layups tonight for this promo that weren't hit. So I would agree. I don't think Taz is involved at all because, like you said, if it is, it's probably, you know, Arn hitting a spine buster on somebody level. And, you know, you and I have laid out why we don't think the Jack Perry character is working as a heel. If you have Taz come out and hit a move on him and Hook pins him, I mean, that's kind of the end of the character as any sort of level. He's basically just going to be a guy for people to beat at that point, and that's not really a great investment for all the time you put into him as a character. So I would avoid that. I would have non-TV as opposed to do something like that if I'm the booker.
Okay. Lots of good topics from JB. Here's got another one. I noticed this too. I mentioned it in my report. I was kind of surprised that the production showed a sign in the crowd after the Britt Baker, Taya Valkyrie match that said, book the women's division better. And it even seemed to linger on it. I didn't get the stopwatch out, but it was on for 2 seconds, give or take half a second, which is a 1,000 long time to be reading a sign that is basically a booking critique that a lot of people feel. And you're just showing it. Like, it wasn't in the background of something. It was aimed at it. It was very weird, Tyler. So your thoughts on that? I mean, I guess maybe somebody saw women's division and said, hey, there's a sign. And they went to it, not having read the whole thing. That's honestly my guess. And they're like, oh, crap. So what do you think of that? And what do you think of the Britt Baker Taya Valkyrie match? And you know, how they built it up on the show and the finish, the worst lockjaw ever.
Yeah, I would say on the production standpoint, if AEW had a sterling reputation of not having a couple gaffes every show, I would say that there is some underlying critique by somebody in the control booth to linger on that. But I think the Occam's razor of it all is that, yeah, it's probably what you laid out there is the most likely scenario. Or that was just the planned camera shot and it was there. And then Tony Khan saw it and was like, camera two. And then, you know, they switched. So, but yeah, that match, it was real bad. And usually I try to be pretty generous on matches, but, you know, I think the final third was okay. The ending was pretty abrupt. And like you said, a pretty bad lockjaw. And it just, you know, Britt has not advanced whatsoever as an in-ring performer. And it feels, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a time where she could be champion again, but it just feels like a lot of that has been lost. And, you know, obviously her winning tonight was the way to go because Taya Valkyrie's already lost to Chris Statlander and Britt set up that she was going for the TBS title. But, you know, Taya ran circles around her in the ring and kind of salvaged that match. And Britt was wrestling at a, you know, half speed. And it didn't feel like it should have been on television the way that match was worked for me personally. And I don't really love saying that, but yeah, it was not good. And it kind of makes you think like what the use for Britt is long-term, and she's a legacy star, kind of the first, you know, female star built within the company, but is she kind of going to be on the Saraya level where she's part of a group and interferes good or bad and is kind of that figurehead and not wrestling a ton? And is that her kind of capacity long-term? I don't know, but this is the first time I've really had that thought watching Britt in a match. And there's obviously a good reason why she's in a ton of tag matches for the last year. And it just kind of showed itself tonight. So yeah, not a big fan of this at all.
Yeah. All right. And finally, then, anyone else notice the background coloring for Dynamite 200 looked identical to what they were using for NXT 2.0? Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, I don't think it's like exclusive or a copy, but it has some similarities. And then he just says, it seems like it's going to be a tall task to book All In, All Out, and Grand Slam all within a month. As always, love the show and go VIP. Yeah, they got a lot to cover in the next month. And to mention All In and still not tell people if they're going to be able to see it outside of the stadium is weird.
And yeah, I agree. And the just on the graphic, to me, it was kind of an homage to the opening video for when Dynamite first premiered. They had a lot of that kind of exploding neon look. And I think that was kind of just like the still shot was what I got from seeing that, but I could be wrong. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you thought June was the biggest month in AEW history, as we were promoting, as Tony Schiavone was promoting that a couple weeks ago, I think September and, you know, late August, September is the new biggest month in AEW history from a booking standpoint. And very curious how that Arthur Ashe show specifically, like, it's going to be very hard and All Out too. You know, how many, if you have, let's say, 8 matches at All In and you have 8 at All Out, you know, that's me being hopeful, would probably be, you know, 12 and 13
yeah.
range. But how many of those are going to be retreads? Cause they almost have to be, cause you can't tell enough stories. Are
right.
Is that 7 retreads? And at what point is, like, it better be free on Max, the all-in show, because you're not going to get people to pay for two shows back-to-back that are the same matches over and over again. So very curious to see how this goes. And I think – yeah, go ahead.
No, and you're going to have matches – tag matches that turn into two singles, or two singles that turn into a tag, or the tag match that turns into a six-man. You know, that seems like they've got to do that, or they really go – they cut back the length. Well, they can't. I mean, they got to have every star at that stadium at Wembley.
Mm-hmm.
They can't not have all the big stars there. So, yeah. All right. We'll go back. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Tyler. Yeah.
I was going to say, you're going to sell out the Chicago, because they're at the United Center or the Allstate mm-hmm. Arena. I think there's two there. So, they're not at the Schaumburg. That's changed names so many times. But, where the original All-In was at and the first, All-Out was at. So they're in a bigger arena. So you think you're going to sell that out no matter what, being in Chicago. So I think you're right that if you're Tony Khan, you lean more on all the stars. I mean, you're going to have all the stars on both, but it feels like everybody for sure is at All In, and you might have not Sting at All Out or something like that. So something to look out for, as, taking for granted, so to speak, that Chicago town selling out basically no matter what. I think interesting thing to track.
Yep. All right. We will wrap up our color portion here with David Bryant, the AW Collision Hits and Misses writer for PWTorch.com. Give us a call. David, good to hear from you.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, good. Thanks for calling.
How you guys
What's
doing?
On your mind? Buck Dynamite. Good.
Well, the main topic I was calling about, you guys covered it almost as soon as I hit the call button, which is the Ty Lawley versus Britt Baker match. But it got me thinking, because I was enjoying what you guys were saying, and what do you think is the women's match that is big enough to put on at All In?
Yeah, good question. I mean, they haven't done a nice job following up on Willow Nightingale and what she's accomplished and the statement she's made. I'd be rolling the dice on her right now more than reinvesting in Britt Baker. Jamie Hayter, I don't know her timeline. Toni Storm still seems like, a star. Tyler, what do you think? I mean, it's sad that I'm not just coming up with, three or four candidates, whether they're actual feuds or just potential feuds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would ask a question first. If you took 100 people in that Albany arena tonight, how many do you think could name who the women's champion is? Not the TBS champion, but the AEW women's champion. Is it like 75? 70? I mean, I don't think it's 100. And I think 100 could name MJF as the men's champion. And that's just like how how it's being booked, because you didn't see them on the show tonight. So that's a problem. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if we know what the status of Thunder Rosa. I think if she came back, that would feel like a big thing to challenge for the title, whether she has to win or not. Obviously, I think we're going to get Chris and Britt for the TBS titles where we're going there. So that feels like something. But, that's what I would have right now. Jade's been off for a while. I don't know what's going on there. So a Jade coming back feels like something. But, yeah, it's that it's one of its weaker points in company history, for sure, the women's division.
David, what's your pick?
Honestly, what you guys said was kind of the answer I was looking for, which is, I think it points out that the women's division, which has so much potential. I mean, if you saw the Athena versus Willow Nightingale match at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, I can't imagine somebody watching that and going, this is worthless, because it's not. It's worth a lot. And it seems like there's just money in the center of the table, and Tony Khan is just sort of not reaching out far enough to get it because it's too much effort. And he doesn't seem like the kind of person who would do that or be that way. So it's very surprising to me. If I had to put one match on and just pick it right now out of the blue, I would pick a fourth version, even though I know you've seen them wrestle three times already. Well, I've seen them wrestle three times already, and like maybe 10% of the rest of the audience. But put Athena versus Willow Nightingale match number four there and see if they can't top the main event of the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's as good as anything, or it's really close to as good as anything that they can do in the next few weeks. To make it seem important. But, I mean, that fan sign that the camera pointed at is starting to feel pretty accurate in terms of needed advice right now as we try to come up with something. I mean, there's a lot of things AW fans like about AW and can use as a sales pitch, but you have to make the way the women's division is booked is not something you're going to hear as a strength for very many people. And this conversation is straight above it. Tyler?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, if you did Willow and Toni Storm for the title, I think, you know, with Athena in there right now in July of 23, I think those are your best working women at the moment. And I think Willow and Toni obviously have a more prestigious title the way the company frames it, just barely. But that would be the best work rate match you could probably get out of the show. Maybe make it a triple threat match just to make sure you get some good action in there. And I think that would be the way to go. But, you know, the story is kind of lacking, and I don't know if it would get time to tell that story. So,
David, back to you.
Yeah, it's a shame because I love AEW, and mm-hmm. I know you know from publishing my hits and misses columns, I love women's wrestling, probably more than the vast majority of fans, and I really wish I could get that fantastic women's wrestling fix on AEW all the time, every time I tune in, at least one great match, because there are fans out there, and I don't know why you would leave anything on the table when you want to take everything you can get. That was, you know. The other thing I was going to ask is if, you know, you guys mentioned who would be the next world champion. I was going to, I was wondering, can I mention like my five choices?
Yeah, please do.
I think if any champion you would have to build a story around and convince people for. You got to do that. But the people I think had it in them that they could do that with is Darby Allin. He's small. But you can tell that story. It's been told before. Miro, I honestly don't understand why he's not up there. Hook, Hobbs, and at the top of that list, Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks, I joke about the aging software and wonders for The Rock, but Ricky Starks really does have that it factor, almost like The Rock had, where he can talk about anything. He could talk about having spaghetti for dinner, and it would be fascinating. And at the end of it, you'd all be like, I want spaghetti. I didn't do the start of this, but now I need Italian food. And that's a gift that I don't think you can just find on the street and be sitting right there. That's my answer.
We didn't give much attention to Powerhouse Hobbs. Or for that matter, Miro. I think I mentioned him in passing. What do you think of David's list and his case at the other?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the wrestlers. Again, I just took it from the Tony Khan perspective of how he's booked Hobbs has not been. I would not see that flipping a 180 in him consistently booking him, or really any big guy of his size. You know, Wardlow being another example, Luchasaurus. It just seems like those guys are in the big guy division, Brian Cage as well. And that's really all they are allowed to do within a Tony Khan booking system is kind of work with other like-sized guys and then disappear for a while. So that's the only reason I didn't bring him up. And then Miro, it just seems like him and Tony don't maybe see eye-to-eye consistently, I guess, if you could say. So I don't know if he would want to make him his champion for those reasons. But I think he's got, you know, the potential is pretty endless with him. He works a good style for his size. He can work almost anybody. He could work a Hobbs, he could work a Darby, and both matches could be fantastic. Starks is a guy who is not going to give you a five-star match very often, but he's going to give you a five-star promo. He's going to tell a story, and I think him being heel in this situation with CM Punk tells me that it's more to get Punk over than Starks, so that just tells me the intentions of Tony Khan, where if you were to flip that and have Punk be the one to turn on Starks after losing, and Starks wins in the end. And if you did that, he would feel like a top guy. And I just don't think that's the trajectory, but I think you could certainly do it if you put the effort behind it, because he is that special. But, you know, I'd want to lock him down if I'm Tony Khan before I made a decision like that as well.
David, anything else you want to bring up?
The last thing I'll bring up, I wanted to mention, I thought that I went on a rant in my last Kids and Mrs. column about some of the camera work, the director's missing shots, and it did feel like it did it feel better on the show. It was not perfect, and it really needs to get better than even what happened tonight, because there were some moments where they were showing the wrong side of the arena pretty clearly. But I'm still baffled about they so missed major spots in the Blood and Guts match, which was one of the most viewed Dynamites of the entire year, and they knew it was going to be. They knew they had eyeballs that were going to come out of the walls to watch that match, and this was a chance to capture them, and they missed vital parts. And I read a story that said that, and I'm sure you could expound on this because you know so much more than I ever do. I just know what's on the internet. But a story that the ending was changed mid-match and there were spots missed, and that's why they ended up missing the ending, missing some of the stuff that they did in the match. And I was actually going to ask, you know, if you could expound on that. And also, there was supposedly an angle after of reconciliation between the Elite and Blackpool Combat Club. Is that what's the truth to that, and do you think they will follow up on that?
I don't know about the match. The director having an excuse to miss spots because it went off the normal course. I think you should be good enough to not do that. But, you know, if that happens, it's a little bit more of an excuse. I don't remember anything with what you said, David, the Black Bull Comic Club and House of Black coming together, or an angle after Dynamite or something? I guess I don't quite understand.
Well, the report that I read said that the match was supposed to end with a few minutes left for Kenny Omega to cut a promo.
Yeah.
That would be a reconciliatory promo towards Blackpool Combat Club. No, that's... I have no idea if that's true or not.
Gotcha, okay.
But if it is, do you think they'll circle back to it?
Kyler, do you remember reading about that?
No. I could believe it, but because Kenny has some of his best promos, off the air. I think he's had like three or four, especially with Will Ospreay. He's had like three really good promos against Will Ospreay that have not been on air and not re-aired. So I would not be shocked if he had a big moment where he had a pretty good promo and they kind of buried the hatchet after going to war. That would make a lot of sense, but also I think a lot of those haven't been shown because the cameras are off legitimately, setting up for Rampage or something. That would not be the surprise. Again, the Occam's Razor of it all is like the error and Tony and Kenny Omega getting on the mic, cutting a good promo because it's not big pressure, lights on, and not being retained would be my guess.
I wonder if the brawl after the main event match tonight was sort of planned, like we're going to end early, we're going to practice ending early, but we'll just have a brawl afterwards to fill an extra minute and a half, but we don't want to run out of time, so we'll for sure end early, but then we'll just brawl afterwards to fill whatever time is left. Like, that was my take on it. I didn't think the post-match brawl served much of a purpose tonight.
Yeah, I thought it was literally a vessel to get Tony Schiavone to say we're dangerously out of time on AEW at some point, so it didn't feel like a main event, that's for sure. It felt less. It just didn't feel like a Dynamite main event, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. David, thanks for calling.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. I love the work you guys do, and you're doing a great job of the show. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Everybody, check out David Bryan's Collision Hits and Misses at pwtorch.com. He does a great job with that. Brings a different voice and a different focus than the things that I tend to focus on. And that's one of the great things about having different writers is different things that they focus on, different writing styles, different senses of humor. And it's great having David writing for the site. And I'm glad he called in tonight. All right. Tyler, anything else from tonight's show that maybe is in your notes or on your mind that we didn't cover that you think we should sneak in here at the end?
No, I don't think so. We didn't talk the main event match per se, but I don't think it needed to be talked about.
I know.
So,
I mean, the main event match, what was the story of the match?
That's what I was like. I put that in my notes. I was like, there must have been something that was on Rampage that I missed that set this up. And, I'm usually not this guy. Usually this is more your lane. But, as I was watching it, organically, I had the thought of, like, why are these people fighting? Like, this feels like literally a match to fill time, and they're not fighting for anything. The winner doesn't, you know, they're not going to be elevated in any way, shape, or form in my mind. And, you know, I think that's some of like when WWE, especially the 3-hour Raw, when there's some matches on there that feel totally inconsequential, that's when the show's at its worst. And that's kind of the feeling I had here with this match of, you know, A, should the best friends in 2023 be main eventing any kind of television product? I don't think so, the way they've been booked. And I mean, when's the last time they had a major win? Was it beating Santana Ortiz during the pandemic?
Probably.
Know, in the parking lot? Like, yeah. I mean, for real. And so it just feels like the watering down of Dynamite more than Collision, because Collision is the shiny new object. But the star power, when the entire Elite are not on the show and Jericho's not in a match, and you know, Moxley's kind of all around, but it just, you can really, really feel it with this main event tonight. It felt very much like an early AEW where, you know, they don't have all the stars that they have now. And, you know, not that every week's like this, you know, last week was a huge episode, so you do have to have the come down episode. So I understand all that, but it was very much felt like 2 hours of Rampage as opposed to a Dynamite from an important standpoint. And, you know, I think the show was fine enough to watch, but, you know, if someone's listening to this, thank you. But I could see also why, you know, people that are listening to this probably more likely didn't watch the show and they want to get our recap of it to feel informed as opposed to sitting there and watching it. And that was indicative of the performances tonight. So,
Yeah, and also just the idea that last week people thought maybe Mox is turning babyface, throwing in the towel for Yuta, and then Pac, you know, abandoning them and all that. And I mean, it's just, it didn't feel like that was even on their mind as a thing on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so, agreed. You know, it's like, oh, this match exists to serve another purpose, and it didn't. It ultimately didn't, so. All right, Tyler.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry, yeah.
I would say, especially with Pac and, you know, Lucha Bros having such a history, and that could be the story, but they didn't say it. And then Pac didn't get involved at all. It had his match independent, but it was there. So, yeah. So it is all very kind of strange when you look at it in that capacity. So
Yeah. It's kind of a weird show in that respect. All right, very good. Tyler, thanks. Always great talking to AEW with you.
Yeah, thanks.
And thank you to our listeners. And, we'll talk to you Friday night after SmackDown. And on the Blue Logo Show, Todd Martin will be on for the flagship this week. And that'll drop on Thursday night. So check that out over on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast Blue Logo Show. Talk to you all next time.